this is your Polycast for Tuesday, June 21st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a storm kills Congressman Tim Walz's brother and the Somali community in the aftermath of the federal terrorism trial. Strong winds and tornadoes ripped through much of northern Minnesota Sunday night, toppling trees and power lines and claiming the life of at least one person. The man who was killed was Craig Walz, a high school teacher and the brother of DFL Congressman Tim Walz. John Enger reports many took shelter when the storm pounded the area.
The storm came on suddenly, says National Weather Service meteorologist Dean Packingham.
Once that cold front blew up, it was just from nothing to, you know, just huge thunderstorms within a matter of tens of minutes.
Jason Moline huddled with his wife and two young kids in his basement south of Deerwood.
I thought that our area was going to be safe and it was going to slide to the north of us.
But it didn't pass by. 150-year-old white pine snapped in half and punched through his kitchen roof.
Incredibly loud crash followed by wind. It was probably the scariest, you know, moment. My son Alexander has asked numerous times if God is mad at us. Trying to explain that to an 8-year-old poses some challenges right now.
All told, the Moline family lost 80% of the trees on their 6-acre lot, a fishing boat, and most of the shingles from their house. Not far from the Moline's house, a family was nearly crushed when a 2-foot-thick pine broke through the roof of their mobile home, pinning them to a couch. Deerwood Assistant Fire Chief Tom Nixon describes what he heard when he got there.
We could hear them hollering for help, so once we got through the debris to get to them, which only took a couple of minutes, thankfully, we were able to make at least eye contact, and I reached in and grabbed their hand. I said, "We're there. We're going to help you."
Nixon's crew fired up chainsaws, rescuing the couple and their 5-year-old boy as torrential rains fell. The family sustained only mild injuries, but lost their home and everything in it. Cook County Sheriff Pat Eliason recalls what happened in the Boundary Waters canoe area.
We had 4 campers, and a tree fell on 2 of them, resulting in 1 fatality and 1 other person with significant injuries.
Sheriff Eliason says high winds toppled trees across the wilderness area. Several of those trees landed on campsites at Clove and Duncan Lakes, where Craig Walz was killed. A high school math and science teacher in southern Minnesota, Walz was the brother of Congressman Tim Walz. In a statement from his spokesperson, the family said they were grateful to law enforcement, first responders, and fellow campers who responded immediately to help. A statement from the DFL state party said Craig Walz's son, Jacob, was injured. Also injured were 3 people from an outdoor education program in St. Louis County. They were hit by what authorities call an indirect lightning strike. Right now, Weather Service assessment crews are traveling the state. They believe a tornado touched down near Staples, another near Deerwood and Crosby, and finally one between Warba and the Meadowlands. But the National Weather Service's Packingham says it will take a lot of work just to tally up all the damage. John Enger, Minnesota Public Radio News in Bemidji.
Some Somali American leaders say they're hoping a federal judge will show compassion in the sentencing of 3 Minneapolis men convicted this month of trying to enlist with the terror group ISIS. The month-long trial remains an open wound for many in the Somali American community. Dawal Lee Saikautau reports that a sentencing date is still months away, but many are hoping U.S. District Judge Michael Davis won't put the men away for life.
Judge Davis has a tough task ahead of him. The sentencing of 9 young men, 6 who already pleaded guilty to conspiracy to provide material support to ISIS, and the 3 who were found guilty just 2 weeks ago of multiple terror-related crimes, including conspiracy to murder abroad.
I've never been a judge, but judges always tell me the hardest part of the job is sentencing.
That's former U.S. Attorney from Minnesota, Thomas Heffelfinger, now with the Minneapolis law firm Best and Flanagan.
I can guarantee you that this judge is going to look at anything and everything. This judge is going to look at the crime for which they're convicted, and he's going to look at his alternatives. And I suspect that for Judge Davis, this will be one of the hardest sentencings he has had to do.
Judge Davis took more than half a year to sentence several young men who traveled to Somalia to join another terror group, Al-Shabaab. However, this sentencing could take even longer because Davis, in the spring, created a pre-sentencing program aimed at de-radicalizing the defendants. It's the first of its kind in the United States and is based on a German model that has helped to rehabilitate some neo-Nazis and other extremists. Some of the defendants have already been evaluated to see if they qualify for the program. Heffelfinger says, if the FBI had not stopped defendants Guled Omar, Abdirahman Dawood, and Mohammed Farah in their attempts to join ISIS, the young men would have ended up in Syria.
And they would have either been carrying weapons and fighting or killing themselves with explosives. The real losers in this radicalization, therefore, are these Somali kids whose lives would be cut short.
To date, at least five ISIS recruits from Minnesota have traveled to the Middle East and are believed to have died fighting for extremist groups. More than 20 Twin Cities men have traveled to Somalia to join al-Shabaab since the fall of 2007. And over the last 2 years, nearly 90 people have been charged in the United States with ISIS-related crimes. Kyle Loven is the FBI spokesman for the Minneapolis division. He says the FBI is not engaged in fishing expeditions and is not targeting the Somali American community.
We are only looking into individuals for whom we have a reason to look into and investigate. We take the facts as they are. We follow the facts. We don't manipulate situations or scenarios. I think the message for young people across Minnesota and elsewhere is that if they're not involved in criminal activity, they have nothing to fear from the FBI.
Attorneys for the three defendants questioned whether the government tried to entrap the young men using an informant, but the jury rejected that allegation. NPR News contacted a number of jurors, but all declined to be interviewed. During the trial, jurors saw ISIS propaganda videos that the defendants watched and heard conversations secretly recorded by the FBI informant. NPR requested some of the recordings, many of them too difficult to understand because people are either speaking over one another or using foreign terms. In this audio, the informant is driving a car and talking to defendant Guled Omar, who tells the informant he'll kill Turkish security officials once he arrives at the Syrian border.
Bro, once I'm there, I'm at the khana. This do or die, bro. I'm killing the bro. Wallahi billahi ta'ala, I'll kill him. If I'm in Turkey, wallahi, I'll kill them.
In another recording, also in a car, defendant Mohammed Farah tells the informant he could kill an FBI agent if cornered.
I'm going to kill the one I need.
Prosecutors told the jury that these conversations, along with others, showed a verbal agreement to travel overseas to join a group designated by the U.S. as a foreign terrorist organization. But defense attorneys argued their clients were impressionable young men, fresh out of high school, doing what young people do, watching YouTube videos, playing paintball, and talking big around one another. Attorney Murad Mohammed, who represents Mohammed Farah, says his client and the other defendants were hijacked by ISIS to believe they could get closer to God through martyrdom.
It's scary at first when you hear the allegations, but these kids were going there to fulfill what they thought was an Islamic and religious goal.
Many of these individuals are not plotting terrorist attacks in the United States or in Europe.
Michael German is author of the book Thinking Like a Terrorist.
They're actually just talking about going to participate in a foreign conflict. And that is a very American tradition.
He's a former special agent for the FBI with 16 years of experience in federal law enforcement, infiltrating extremist groups and specializing in domestic terrorism.
What we need to do is make sure that we are not reinforcing the terrorist narrative, right? They're trying to use horrific violence to make themselves appear stronger than they are. And rather than amplify that message, we should be putting it in context.
He says there's a public narrative that exists in the United States about foreign conflicts, which scares Americans into believing that ISIS recruits will return stateside to harm U.S. citizens.
Empirical studies of actual terrorists show that that's simply not true. If we focus on solving violent crime, we're going to come across more terrorism plotting and planning than we will by monitoring Twitter and other social media.
At a park just north of downtown St. Paul, police officers with community ambassadors are spending a few hours getting to know families in the neighborhood. Kasim Basuri is a Somali American who in July will celebrate 20 years in Minnesota. During the day, he works at a daycare center. By night, he's a consultant on youth violence prevention in the Twin Cities.
This right here is beautiful. City of St. Paul, the police department, does a great job of doing outreach to all types of community, whether it be the Muslim community, the Asian community, the African-American community. Not in a secretive way, not in an initiative to find out information about them, but to come out so the officers can come out and just sit with the families and the kids.
Despite what the FBI has said about not targeting any group, Basuri felt the entire community was on trial. And now, he says, more people live in fear.
Everybody is watching what they say on the phone. They're watching what they say to their friends. It feels like we're living in fear and the government is pushing us to live in this fear.
Asma Muhammad believes the defendants felt disconnected from the U.S. She counsels young people and families at a nonprofit called Learning Works, part of the Blake School in Minneapolis. She says she feels angry and sad that the government used the informant to, in her words, criminalize young men whom she believes felt ostracized.
Instead of working with disenfranchised students and working with students who have been on the margins of society in so many different ways. Like, they are children of immigrants, so they're first-generation students, they're Black students, they are growing up in an incredibly racist and xenophobic world, and all of this is being held against them.
It's true, says Muhammad Muhammad, director of the nonprofit West Bank Community Coalition in the Cedar Riverside neighborhood of Minneapolis.
Young Somali Minnesotans exist within a racial and religious profile that makes them less than their peers. In this case, it's less American.
And like many community leaders, including imams and politicians, he's tired of this narrative.
The fact is that Cedar Riverside isn't a no-go zone or a hotbed of terrorism. It's a strong community in spite of endless obstacles and systemic disinvestment.
Instead of being suspicious of Somali Americans, Muhammad hopes the public will engage with them to learn more about the challenges young people face and what they need to be successful in Minnesota. Dwahli Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.